Beyond Governance, Making Sense of Doing Business in South Africa, is proudly sponsored by Plus 94 Research, the science of decision making.
Did you know that where markets are concerned, it's not easy to detect the difference between objective and subjective reality, or between reality and fantasy? The business's view of the consumer has serious bottom line implications. At Plus 94 Research, we help businesses cut through the uncertainty by gathering and processing real consumer intelligence through advanced scientific research methodologies. Plus 94 Research, the science of decision making.
Good morning to you and welcome to it. This is your favorite show here at 101.9 High FM. My name is Nomrat Mbele. I'm happy to be sharing this space and time with you as we continue to get insights and observations from, you know, pertinent, if not seasoned, entrepreneur and executives who grace the shores of this show. Before we get to the gist of our conversation, we all know that the election manifestos have been obviously have kick-started, and every single major political party has put their manifestos on the billboard and so on and so forth, with a view, of course, in trying to woo us as electorate so that we can vote for them. And I often said there's substance in every, there has to be substance. And there has to be merit. There has to be, you know, core of what each and every party stands for. In the main, we are expecting to be led by men and women who have integrity. Without integrity, I would not put my mark next to that particular party. Without any track record, I'll doubt if I would waste my 4 years without to a party that has no track record. And it's also important to see who is in the list of those particular parties, because instances where parties nominate officials without us knowing who they are, it's a way of trying to hide, it's a way of not trying to be accountable. So if we know who you represent and we are certain about the caliber of a person you are, we are more likely to vote for you. So these are very important issues which every single political manifesto is bringing to our attention. But anyway, the conversation is not about political manifestos. It's just a way of reflecting back, as this is something that is taking the country by storm. We definitely are anticipating to, you know, this is probably one of the highly anticipated national and provincial election. So as we head towards the polls in May, we need to be ready and nominate or elect men and women who would not just appear on the eve of the election, but they must be part of the furniture. We must see them, we must walk with them, we must address issues that they have promised to do. In that way, that's how we could build confidence. Roads that are not fixed, small things such as water that is not, small things such as electricity, even though it's not small, but the major issues such as electricity, major issues such as infrastructure, particularly roads along N1 and N3, incoming, you know, the amount of the institutions that are meant to make business relatively easy. Creating a business in South Africa is one of the biggest challenges. The red tape is just amazing. So these are some of the small things that we expect a political party would have competent men and women that we can trust, that they will be able to garner sufficient support and energy to address those specific issues to our betterment. Anyway, as we proceed, let's take this opportunity to thank the Mayhem team under the leadership of Howard Feldman. I hope he has kept you entertained and informed as he normally does. They will be back to your radio tomorrow morning at the same time. As I proceed, I also want to pay homage to my own team. You know, first and foremost is Craig Guthrie, who is the controller, as well as Harry Sedeke, who is the producer of the show. Gentlemen, thank you very much for doing excellent work as we continue to navigate the Beyond Governance show. As we proceed, if you have missed any of our previous episode, do not worry, simply go to our website, download any of the podcasts, and share your views with us through our SMS line, which is 34519. My X handle, which is Dr. Mbele, is ready for your inputs. If there's anything that is bugging you, I am more than happy to respond to that particular issue that you have raised. As we proceed, I've indicated that today we are joined by one of the highly respectable individual who is in the banking space. We were putting a spotlight to Roland Sassoon, who is the former CEO at Sasfin Bank, as well as the board member for that particular organization. So this has been a number of interesting times for the bank and the interesting time for the economy. So we're hoping to hear more from Roland in as far as how he has been able to maintain the ship, so to say, since 1999 up to a point where it is now. We're going to take a break and come back in a second.
Beyond Governance, making sense of doing business in South Africa, is proudly sponsored by Plus 94 Research, the science of decision making.
Did you know that where markets are concerned, it's not easy to detect the difference between objective and subjective reality, or between reality and fantasy? The business's view of the consumer has serious bottom line implications. At Plus 94 Research, we help businesses cut through the uncertainty by gathering and processing real consumer intelligence through advanced scientific research methodologies. Plus 94 Research, the science of decision making.
Welcome back. This is Beyond Governance. You've just directed. I'm joined by Ron Sason, who is a former CEO at Sasfin Bank and also a board member. When you started the bank in 1999, you had a lot of, there were fewer red tape, there were fewer regulations. And perhaps maybe it's a reason why businesses are not thriving as they did in the past 20 years, purely because there is just so much red tape, which undermines investments, which undermines productivity, which undermines how people can make a deal, a clean deal, and everybody gets employed. And everybody gets opportunity. Would you say that is one big issue? If we were to reverse business environment, cutting down the red tape would be one of the biggest items to be addressed.
Well, you're 100% right. You completely hit the nail on the head, because that deal, which was a great deal for Sasfin, I don't believe that deal could have happened in today's environment, because first of all, you have to get the Reserve Bank's approval. It required a big reduction in our capital, because basically we were buying goodwill. So I don't think the Reserve Bank would have approved it. Then you have to get the ministerial approval for a large deal. You've got to get competition approval. In those days, there was no such thing as competition approval. It wasn't an issue. So there's so many different approvals that you have to get now to do a deal like that. I don't believe that deal could have happened in the modern world. So that exactly illustrates the point that you've made, is that because of all the red tape that we've got to deal with, business is suffering. That is a very good illustration of that.
As a follow-up, we all know that success from any man, a successful man like yourself would have been surrounded by villagers. I mean, here I'm referring to a group of mentors. Who inspired you? Who did you rely on, particularly when you come back from that meeting where you were like feeling like pulling off your hair because you just don't get it? Did you have one mentor or a group of mentors who ensured that you were well dressed up, particularly when you've been confronted by competing priorities in a boardroom?
Okay, so my first mentor was my father, because I joined his textile business at the age of 17, straight from school. He taught me the basics of commerce, how to see opportunities, how to deal with different situations. So I spent a lot of time with him. That business, that was a textile business, it wasn't sustainable given the change in the whole political landscape of the whole world, really, with the winds of change and all that that were taking place. So I left his business and I basically did an apprenticeship with four financial institutions. I spent 2.5 years in each of these four institutions. So I spent about 10 years with different organizations, and each one was a mentor for me. I learned a lot. I was at Barclays Bank. I was in different organizations, big and small, and that helped me a lot. you know, I formed friendships with various people that were able to guide me as we moved more and more into the financial world and the banking world. And I've been very fortunate with the various directors that we've had at SASFIN. Each has brought a lot of different experience and knowledge, and they've all been mentors to me. So it's difficult to single out anyone.
It's very interesting that you started off with your father, whom you've joined his company at the age of 10, 17. And when you started moving into other commercial banks, you begin to forge a relationship. But, you know, at the genesis of your journey, the certain traits, the certain attributes that you ought to have learned from your father as a mentor, and which then, you know, sort of molded you to become a man of stature that you are today. If we were to go back and say, what are the things that you've learned from your father, which made you to be a stronger leader, empathetic leader, you know, righteous leader, all the other attributes that you can attribute to your dad, what are those? And how did they help you along the way as you meet all this network of individuals?
Sure, that's a good question, not such an easy question to answer off the cuff. Look, he was a very, very good, he was the best salesman I've ever come across in my life. You know, I used to sell textiles to the big groups, and I learned a lot about the way to relate to people, how to treat people, how to treat one's staff, you know, to respect everyone. I think that's perhaps the biggest lesson I learned from my father was respect. You know, respect people of all different backgrounds, different cultures, etc. He was, I think, a master at that. A lot of humility. You know, he came with his own culture, which was very strong, but at the same time, he was very accommodating of everybody, really. I think that's probably the biggest lesson I learned from my father. And, you know, he was very honorable with his, whatever he said, he would do. He was very transparent and honorable. He was open. He would tell the customers everything, and the customers trusted him. And I think gaining trust by being open, even if it creates a little bit of vulnerability on your side, is a positive thing. Transparency, you know, not pretending to be something that you aren't.
Well, that's a mouthful, and it's no surprise that you have lived in over the 40 years or so as the head of the bank, and I'm sure this is a kind of attribute to carry across all your network of businesses that you find yourselves in, which in my view is actually the building block of good corporate governance, because all the values that you have mentioned are actually the building blocks of government, because in absence of integrity, in the absence of trust, in the absence of respect, in absence of accommodating everyone's, in absence of recognizing, in absence of humility, because these are all critical elements which any company that emboldens these is likely to have a very strong corporate culture. If you have a strong corporate culture, your governing outlook is likely to be that of a resilience, so to speak, because as you would know, corporates have to deal with greed. That's the biggest. Trust, you know, lack of trust is big. Greed is big. So I'm quite excited that you know, from your dad as a mentor and any other mentors that you've come across have sort of built more and more layers on resilience, particularly on those particular issues. But as we proceed, one biggest issue in all the deals that you have made and are still to be made, what would you consider the most critical item that you require a deal maker or a deal breaker?
Okay, so if we say a deal breaker, I think if one picks up, and we have over the years, pick up a sign of dishonesty. If a guy, you do your due diligence and you see that, okay, you know, there are always going to be issues when you do your due diligence. But if you can see that somebody, the guy that you're dealing with has withheld critical information, whatever it is, if he's withheld critical information, then to me that's a deal breaker straight away. There's no point in carrying on. And we've had experiences like that where deals looked really great, but then we come across something that even if it's a small thing, but he should have told us this, and he withheld something that we should have, that should have been on the table, then I don't want to deal with him, because what else is there? That to me is a deal breaker. You know, deal maker is, you know, perhaps if you're doing a deal where you get, it's going to, not only is it going to just add to your critical mass, which is really important, but if on top of that, it's going to bring in a new revenue stream, a new type of income, obviously that becomes very exciting, because it opens up opportunities to move into other areas, which is exactly what happened when we did the acquisition of Frankel Pollock, which eventually became our wealth business. So that's really when 1 + 1 equals a lot more than 2. And so obviously that's the kind of thing to look for. But therein lies the risk, because you're now moving into something which you don't really have the knowledge and experience of. So just do your due diligence very well, because you're going into something which you don't really know much about. So you've got to really investigate it. And, you know, with a due diligence, you've got limited time. You've got to make a decision within a certain prescribed time. So sometimes you've got to use a bit of gut feel in a situation like that. And that's when it becomes a bit tricky.
We're going to take a break and come back in a second.
Beyond Governance, making sense of doing business in South Africa, is proudly sponsored by Plus 94 Research, the science of decision making.
Did you know that where markets are concerned, it's not easy to detect the difference between objective and subjective reality, or between reality and fantasy? The business's view of the consumer has serious bottom line implications. At Plus 94 Research, we help businesses cut through the uncertainty by gathering and processing real consumer intelligence through advanced scientific research methodologies. Plus 94 Research, the science of decision making.
Welcome back. This is Beyond Governance. You've just directed. I'm joined by Ron Sason, who is a former CEO at Sasfin Bank and also a board member. I'm quite intrigued that you brought in the gut feel, because there's no formula in gut feel. If you're about to make a deal, you have to look at, you know, figures and facts, and because figures and facts don't lie, because you are able to cut through the clutter. But the other point that you raised, which is important in the context of a board, because we have had instances where most of the board members, you know, are not men of structure in terms of putting what is in the best interest of the company, you know, issues of diligence, issues of loyalty. We have seen more and more of those kinds of caliber. What would you say attributes or account for malfeasance at the board level, wherein, you know, the diligence that you're referring to, a person simply just gloss over, is less interested, or is interested in other? We have instances where people don't declare interest. They simply just keep quiet, knowing that there are some deals they want to catch behind the scenes. There are instances around insider trader that you are aware of. People just keep quiet and have a bit of coffee with their golf buddies and so on and so forth. How do you navigate those issues? I'm sure you must have come across them, and they must have been very unpleasant for you.
We have had issues like that. But I can tell you this, that over all these years, we've really had fantastic board members, really have. We've been very blessed. There have been one or two rogues. There have been one or two rogues. I'm not going to go into details on the rogues, because, you know, that would kind of open up a whole different area. But there have been rogues where they were trying to undermine the company. They were trying to even do a kind of a coup where they would, one or two of our directors, tried to basically, by talking to the authorities, they tried to create a situation where they could end up as the kind of the white knight in a situation which was complete false situation that they put across. And, you know, because banks are such sensitive organizations, it's not that difficult to undermine a bank because of, you know, the concerns relating to a run on the bank, etc. So we've had one or two occasions like that. We were able to deal with them very quickly, and we were able to get the rot out quickly. But apart from those one or two situations, we've had wonderful directors, wonderful chairman. At the moment, our latest chairman is retiring due to bad health. But each one of them, and particularly him, have been excellent. I can't complain.
No, that's absolutely good news indeed. The reason why I raised this issue, because we know that in most instances, companies, we had an unfortunate luck by having, board members, one or two bad apples that messed up the entire organization. You look at the infamous, company in South Africa, the name just escapes me. I mean, the CEO literally misled the entire board. And to a point where people's money were lost, and the question has always been, where were the other board members? Sign off. That's what I'm trying to get started off. Where were the other board members? And these are board members of highly, these are competent, smart, and intelligent folks. And something like that happens under this particular leader, where stand off, lose credibility, lose billions of rands. So those are some of the very complex issues, which obviously depend from one company to another. But at the face value, knowing what you know, how would you avoid those kind of instances where there's literally massaging of books? To a point that, you destroy multiple companies, you destroy multiple families.
Yeah, okay, so that was a case where the CEO was accused. I can't say he was found guilty, because I don't think he was, but he was accused of fraudulent activity. So in our case, I was the CEO, right? Never did anything anything. As I say, everything we do is completely transparent. Everything we do is the board sees everything. So I think this is where he was pulling the wool over, or he was accused of pulling the wool over the eyes of the board. In our case, that could never, ever happen, because our books are open. Everything's open, completely open. And I don't get involved, never got involved in creating book entries or anything like that. That was always done by the finance department, if you see what I mean. So as long as, your senior staff are honest, and that's from the CEO downwards, that's great. Unfortunately, we have had situations where junior staff were involved because they kind of conspired together, and they were able, by working together, to put through false and fraudulent transactions. So that, unfortunately, is a very difficult one to stop, where there's a whole syndicate involved. But in the case, as I say, of Steinhoff and others, those big situations, then I think, as I understand it, the CEO was apparently involved in that, and or senior management. So that could never have happened at Sasfin, and it could never happen now with my son as the CEO. I know that it would never, ever happen, because it's completely open. We would never get involved in creating entries and in doing anything like that. It just completely against our culture. Could never happen.
Absolutely. No, thank you very much for that insight, Roland. It has been absolutely beautiful getting, interesting insights of your journey with the bank that you have started back in 1999 to a point where it is now. I mean, you have made significant inroads, major acquisitions that suddenly you've shared with us, and some of your acquisitions are quite interesting. You stood fast on a basis of ethics, and again, this is a key message that is coming out, that if you are fair, if you are transparent, if you are opening up your books, and if you comply, essentially, you are more likely to build a resilient company at the back of strong ethical culture. This show is dedicated to corporate governance, which, if you like, may appear as a fallacy, because it's made up of human elements which needs to be worked on. For an example, trust. Trust is such an important aspect. In any business, organizational culture. Culture is such an important, because when you are upright as a leader, and there are issues of gender inequality, there are issues on gender equity, because you are upright individual, you believe in productivity, you believe in equity, you address those particular issues hands-on. And in instances where there are obviously incentives, you incentivize people according to their performance. Those that are performing, they are being compensated accordingly. And non-performers are pushed aside, as they should. So these are building blocks of a solid corporate governance, over and above what we are being told by the King Four, as well as the Companies Act. It all starts with you and I. And the lesson that I'm picking from you is that you've been that leader that could only apply the laws because it became natural to do so, not so much about compliance malicious compliance, if I may add.
No, thank you for that.
Thank you very much. I'm going to have to do this again at some point. It has been absolutely beautiful having you on Beyond Governance. We appreciate your time.
Thanks a lot, Nimrod. All the best to you.
That was a very interesting conversation we've had with the former CEO of Sassoon Bank, Roland Sassoon, who's now the member of that particular bank. I certainly hope you've thoroughly enjoyed that particular conversation. You've learned a lot from him. As he's a trailblazer. We're going to take a break. We'll be back in a second.
Beyond Governance, making sense of doing business in South Africa, is proudly sponsored by Plus 94 Research, the science of decision making.
Did you know that where markets are concerned, it's not easy to detect the difference between objective and subjective reality, or between reality and fantasy? The business's view of the consumer has serious bottom-line implications. At Plus 94 Research, we help businesses cut through the uncertainty by gathering and processing real consumer intelligence through advanced scientific research methodologies. Plus 94 Research, the science of decision-making.
Welcome back. This is Beyond Governance. You've just directed. I'm joined by Ron Sason, who is a former CEO at Sassoon Bank and also a board member. Before we went to the break, he gave us a very interesting insights on the overview of the economy, which is quite bleak. In a sense, Roland's view is that it was a lot easier to do business back in the 1999 when they started the bank, Sassoon Bank. Government was interfering less. More and more private organizations were able to get involved in business deals, get involved in discussion that brought about businesses. But as as the period unfolded, there we saw, he says, not only in South Africa but elsewhere, there was a more and more tighter grip by introducing socialistic policies. In his view, the biggest one started at the 9/11. After the 9/11, the U.S. government introduced more robust banking regulations and control, and said, as we all know, when the U.S. cough, the rest of us get cold. South Africa followed suit by tightening up the screws around the bank. And so basically, part of the control environment meant that in as much as in the past you were just looking at the savings or the investments of your client, but post the 9/11, you had to be a policeman. You had to look at your clients that are evading tax. You have to look at the clients that have no integrity. At some point, he indicated to us that back in 2000, after the bank crisis, that also pretty much added salt to wound, as a number of banks were subject to yet more stringent control because what has happened. So it has not been an easy kind of environment for banking here in South Africa. Social media, so he says, has made a serious contribution in bringing to light issues around compliance, issues around transparency, which was somehow lacking in some instances, which makes it pretty much difficult for banks to operate or any. The other point that he raised has to do with the POPI Act, which also is a new legislation that requires banks to declare or not to disclose the names of their client. So these are some of the building blocks of complexities, if you like, which resulted from what happened in the years, begin to influence what is happening here in South Africa. So these are some of the points that he shared with us, which we find quite interesting. And he also made a point about what is his philosophy in deal making. And it was quite interesting that he obviously raised an issue around red tape. In his view, red tape is one biggest hindrance in any deal making. Over and above the red tape, the other point had to do with dishonesty. He says to us, if you are dishonest if you don't declare or disclose any item in the due diligence that ordinarily would have been taken for him that would result to a deal breaker. So, and it is quite important for him that all the elements of diligence, whether it's, you know, banking diligence, security diligence, personal diligence, business diligence, all those diligence approaches needs to be taken into account. Partners or will be partners are expected to disclose pretty much everything, and it's not easy for some of them to disclose. Hence, there has been instances where there were two rogue officials, so he says, that made it difficult for some of the deals to go through because they sort of misrepresented some of the information. The other point that he raised with us, which was quite fascinating, in that Sasfin, when he started, it had almost like monoline banking. He had one product. But as the banking regulations get more and more complex, more and more dynamic, each entity was somehow advised or forced to diversify. And the Reserve Bank says, look, you have to diversify, because if you diversify, the level of risk management is a lot higher. But for him, diversification also meant a lot of risk that needed to be attended to. And part of the risk came when they had to annex or perhaps maybe acquire an entity. For an example, Franco Polo was an entity which they bought, and he did not have, or his team did not have, all the competencies that were required. So for when you get into a merger and acquisition, you obviously, part of your streamlining is to have men and women who have technical insights on those particular deals, you know, so that, you know, beyond acquisition, you are able to realize the returns on investments and create wealth for yourself and for your shareholders. So that is one big item which we picked from him as a result of. The shift away from being a monoline banking to a diversified banking entities. So this is a very interesting point that he had to put. And as we proceed, I put to him an issue around his philosophy, because a person of his stature has to have been inspired by a host number of people. And interestingly, his father is among those people that inspired him in so many ways. And he started, you know, working with his dad when he was about 17 years old. And there he learned a number of skills. He learned humility. He learned respect for people. He learned to be patient. And so these are kind of skills and competencies that he learned at an early age, which were then used as a build-up to the level where he became a banker. So it's quite interesting to see how, you know, his journey from being from working in a textile, going back to retail bank, and now having to start his own bank. And he came across as someone who embraced all these issues everywhere he goes, which is quite interesting in so many ways. Let's do this again next week. Shalom.
Did you know that where markets are concerned, it's not easy to detect the difference between objective and subjective reality, or between reality and fantasy? The business's view of the consumer has serious bottom line implications. At Plus 94 Research, we help businesses cut through the uncertainty by gathering and processing real consumer intelligence through advanced scientific research methodologies. Plus 94 Research, the science of decision making.